Interesting idea that may that trust comes from relationship, but here trust is built more on evidence. By that, for example, when we speak from a Dav Marash, we say Emes Vemuna Kozos. So Emes Vemuna implies that first something is Emes, it's true, and since it's true, even when you don't actually perceive it physically in front of you, or there's something which is concealing it, or it's not apparent, so Emuna, you believe it to still be the case, because you pin it to your prior experience, which means that it must continue to be true. If there's something which you never experienced, so then why would you believe in it? But people could believe in UFOs, but why? You know, what is the point of believing in them? I mean, there's no evidence. The only people, you can muster evidence that there are UFOs, then you can believe in them. You can't trust that they're UFOs unless you have some basis upon which to base it. Even what you're saying about trust assumes that there's a relationship. So you're saying trust assumes a relationship also means that you were confronted with the reality of that person or that entity. And since you know it was real or true, so therefore you can trust in it subsequently. So trust, it seems, although emunah literally means trust, right? It doesn't really mean trust, I'm sorry. The word in Hebrew for trust is bitachon. We've talked about Hashem means to trust in Hashem. So emunah is something else. Emunah is belief, and belief is based on an understanding at some point that something was absolutely true. So the same thing we have by Torah, of course. So our emunah in Hashem, our emunah in Torah is based on the assumption, like the Kuzari says, I mean, the many other ways of explaining, but just for the purpose of our conversation, the Kuzari says that emunah is based on the fact that the Jewish people experienced Matan Torah. There was a real event, and since then we have an assumption that our tradition is unbroken since then. So therefore, that is a rational belief in the divinity of Torah. Now, one can also say the same thing about Chachamim, which is what the Mishnah is saying here. Chachamim, generally speaking, they do a pretty good job, right? So since generally speaking, they do a pretty good job, so therefore it is worthwhile for us to accept and believe them, even in cases where we have doubts. It's not that we know the Chachamim, the way the Ron puts it, it's not that we know the Chachamim are going to be right every time. Although there are some Kabbalistic sources which say that Chachamim are right. Everything they say is by definition right. But the Ram says not that they're right every time, but rather that since their overwhelming majority of times they are right, they're sort of said, you know what, listen to what they have to say to you. Right. So the Ram says that that's why we're required to listen to the Chachamim. Our Mishnah says a little bit differently and says that, and yet therefore you should have emunah in the Chachamim. You should have a belief in their significance, in their refinement, in their scholarship, that you have to come into contact with them and believe that there's something special about them. Now, of course, you could come into contact with Einstein or any secular, scientist or genius, and you would also have emunah in them, that you would have emunah that they actually know what they're talking about, since other people have said they know what they're talking about, even though you have no clue. Or you experienced them actually saying good, important, significant things yourself, so that would be a reason for you to have emunah in anybody, not just in Chazal. But emunah chachamim is expressed by, generally speaking, in terms of Chazal, really means a little bit more. It means that fundamentally we believe that Chazal represents to us the ideal fulfillment of what a person's mission in this world, meaning that they not only have wisdom, but they also have Yirat Shamayim. They have the awe of heaven, which is a precondition, which is necessary in order to be able to have a grasp of Torah, right? So many of the things we've said till now are based on that assumption that a person has to have, and many things we will say, that a person has to have those proper midos in order to accomplish Torah, and therefore we just have to assume that Chachamim have those proper midos. Now, Emunah Chachamim, according to the Ran, doesn't necessarily mean they'll always be right, but it means usually they're right because they're pretty smart. And I believe that smart people, or holy people, whichever way you want to put it, have something significant to say, and what they say is probably right. So therefore I should proceed with that belief. That's one understanding of Emunah Chachamim. Another understanding of Emunah Chachamim would be to say that since Hashem said to the Jewish people, you know what, guys, guess who I'm putting in charge? I'm leaving you, right? He says in the desert, and you're going to have the Sanhedrin, you're going to have the Beis Din, you're going to have the Zakenim. So if Hashem delegated this responsibility of leading the Jewish people in halacha to this Canaan, so therefore we assume that Hashem has some sort of divine control, this is probably not the right word, but some sort of divine relationship with them. And since he has a divine relationship with them, therefore things that they think of or intuit are things which represent the will of God. That's why the Gemara in Baal Basra, Daf Yudbeis, says that Chacham Adik Min Navi. A Chacham, a wise person, a sage, is greater than a Navi. What does it mean it's greater than a Navi? There are many interpretations, but the way the Ramban interprets it is that a Navi only gets Nevuah when he gets Nevuah, when God chooses to impart some message to him. But a Chacham, he always can extract the truth from the Torah which is residing within him. Of course, it's better to be a Chacham and a Navi. But theoretically, where they put the opposite of each other, so a Navi is limited only to the time when he actually gets his Nevuah. But a Chacham can, at any time, reveal truth. So that means that Torah has an influence upon a person, which is a divine influence, which is that a person who has possessed Torah has the unique capability of perceiving truth above and beyond other people. So it's not just that Chachamim usually function correctly. It's not just Chachamim have Yiras Shamayim, but Chachamim also have a special bond between themselves and Hashem, which is derived from the Torah. Yisrael arayt of Kutcha B'ichu Chadu. The Jews, the Torah, and God are all one, and therefore if this person is full of Torah, he must be very connected to God. So the Emunah Chachamim leads us to understand that when the Chachamim say something, it's not just that it's probably true. It's not just that it was the product of a smart mind, but also that it has come from some divine, I shouldn't say revelation, but divine inspiration which emanates from within themselves, from the Torah they've acquired in their mind and in their heart. Now, you know, of course, there are big issues in terms of how far you take them with the Chachamim, right? It's the Emunah Chachamim to be taken to the very ends of all aspects of a person's life or not. So Baal HaTanya says, no, not really. Baal HaTanya says that unless a Chacham is a prophet, so he can't necessarily tell you, you know, what you should do in your personal life, where you should marry, where you should live, how you should make a living.
What car you should buy, who you should vote for.
Right, that kind of stuff he can't necessarily tell you because that's not necessarily something which emanates from his Torah. But to the extent that he is made into a more, a more insightful person by having mastered areas of Torah and Halacha in which you're supposed to listen to what he has to say, we assume that he also has greater insight, although not necessarily infallibility. Except that certain rebbes do.
They do, but can they?
No, well, Lubavitcher, for example, holds that the rebbe is infallible. That he could not have made a mistake. I don't know about other Hasidim. I suspect other Hasidim have that attitude as well. I just know that it's true about Lubavitch.
What about, according to Baal HaTanya, it seems like there is no basic difference between Torah and secular stuff.
According to who?
According to Baal HaTanya, a guy comes to college and listens to what the teacher and
right.
Do whatever he tells.
Right.
At least he knows his physics.
Right.
So ask him about what girlfriend you should have in college mm-hmm. and where should you go on vacation. So according to Baal HaTanya, there is no difference between Torah and secular.
No. The difference is that in Torah, there's besides the actual knowledge, there's also the Yiras Shamayim and Avas Hashem, which is necessary. So that too you can get from your Rebbe. Your professor in college only teaches you knowledge, wisdom. It doesn't inspire you ethically or emotionally or cause you to be a transcendent and refined human being. That only a Talmid Chacham can do. Some of them can't do it. But that's the ideal is that they're able to, you know, all aspects of Avodas Hashem, not just wisdom, not just knowledge, but all aspects of divine service you should be able to get from the Talmud Chacham. As in where it says, you know, even the so to speak, idle talk, you know, the frivolous talk of a Talmud Chacham requires understudy. Why? If you were talking about a professor in college, right, no matter what kind of professor he was, When he goofs off, right? If he's on vacation or he's out of the office, whatever the case may be, so he's not at that point the professor of physics or English literature, whatever it is. But a Talmud Chacham is a Talmud Chacham wherever he goes, whatever he's doing. So therefore, by definition, it impacts upon him in an entirely different way. As a result, one should be able to learn not just from the time that he's actually telling you Torah, but the time even that he's having conversation with you. That's also part and parcel of our understanding with the Chachamim. That we believe the Chachamim have a substance to them, a way to them which permeates, which pervades their entire lives.
And having access to that is part of that. If they're not able to mediate this to people, if they're not able to relate to people, this is not, they're not so whole as...
Well, some people don't have good...
They're not necessarily Talmud Chacham unless they are able to be in a situation wherein that can be disseminated from them?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there are people who certainly are gifted with better communication skills than people who are handicapped by poor communication skills.
However blessed by amazing ability to...
Right. So we have to find other ways of communicating, like the Rabbi Trevor, who was incapable of carrying on a conversation, it seems, wrote many books, right, wrote lots of stuff down, which are also hard to understand, but at least he wrote it down. He held one point, he said, he wrote several times to people, he said that he wrote thousands and thousands of letters. He wrote somewhere, he said that this is his primary primary manner of imparting Torah, or teaching Torah, by writing letters. So a person has to be able to communicate, obviously, in some way, shape, or form. He has to communicate, so, you know, it's hard to say. It is a deficiency, clearly. To what extent it's a major deficiency, I can't really say. So Emunas Chachamim doesn't just mean that when they tell me things, I have to accept. It doesn't just mean when they tell me things, I have to accept it. But rather, they should be credible in my eyes. Now, of course, the question is which Chachamim we're referring to. Right? The Chachamim, this time, this Gemara, this Mishnah was written at the time, or Brisa, according to the assumption that the six parables of Brisa, this was written at a time when there were Chazal. So does it apply to Rishonim? Does it apply to Achronim? Does it apply to people today? It was applied to this concept of the Chachamim. And the simple answer is, I don't know. Right? I'm not sure how one should understand it or construe it. It's interesting that most of the Rishonim hold that the prohibition in the Torah, which seems to be somewhat related, not to deviate from the words of the rabbis, specifically refers to the rabbis at the time of Chazal, the Sanhedrin and Chazal. The rabbis afterwards, one is technically allowed to deviate from what they say because they don't have the same authority, they don't have the same stature to impose strictures and restrictions on the Jewish people.
Which prohibition?
Excuse me?
Which prohibition?
Which prohibition what?
You mentioned the prohibition to, like, not to follow words of rabbis. What is it? Which prohibition?
Which prohibition don't you have to?
No, you said there is prohibition not to follow...
No, it's prohibition on not following.
Yes, not following. And which prohibition?
Lo sasur. Do not deviate from that which they tell you.
It means that you are obligated to keep a rabbinical mitzvah?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Everybody understands that somebody applies it for a day?
Yeah, one person, the chinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch says it applies even in our day and age. It applies to Chachamim in each and every generation. Not just Chachamim in
the Which one? Like,
You tell me today that
So if I told
everybody
the question,
and he still answers, and he can listen to it.
I can't.
Yeah. You're supposed to make him aware, so he doesn't answer.
If
sort of,
I didn't tell him to,
he shouldn't have asked somebody. You had no way of knowing this. You already asked somebody.
I didn't need to redeem myself, but in terms of fasting on Petr, sorry, not Petr, on Dennis Bechorin. Simon, Rakowski told me that I should fast. It wasn't such a big deal. But then I was going to San Colorado Springs.
You didn't actually fast, did you?
Huh?
You didn't actually fast.
Did you fast it? No, because usually there is a seam.
Right.
But I was going to Colorado Springs, and I read that no seam there. There is no seam in Colorado Springs.
Right.
It wasn't true, because about guy keeping his stance, and I had a seam and I had. And the question became like more Nagia to me. I can bet the day too fast, because Federer is so late, right?
Right, of course.
And also I'm flying, I will need to help them. And I came to him and I had a few questions, but this was one of them. He said, you got your answer, but there is one opinion that you can get away. It's not fast. This is not fast.
What did you do?
We had teams. I didn't expect to have teams.
Yeah, the mice of the general accepted stock is the general accepted stock is that if he missed the team sheet anyway.
I should keep it anyway?
Yes. Anybody, not just you, any Bukhar. Because this time is Bukhar has no source in Chazal. In the Gesha, I should say, there's science in the Gemara. There might be a source in a later Medrash or one of the Mesechus Ketanos, but it has no primary source, and therefore we're very maker with it. And if a person missed the seum, he should give some money to Tzachah to redeem the kindness and not fast.
Probably my question to Rabbi Rakovsky was, should I take part of the seum?
Yes, I asked him.
At that point, I just was wondering, should I be careful about the seum?
Yeah, I can imagine Rabbi Rakovsky was told you to fast. I've never heard anybody fast on their paper, actually.
I know people who fast, who can take part in Siyum, they hold it, they can fast, they can't help it. Why should they
fast?
People
fast, they're paper?
Not these two people.
Wow.
And they should look for Hatorim. Yes, I'm healthy, Baruch Hashem, why should I look for Hatorim? So it's like, it's all the Siyum, ideal Siyum, it lets you eat, like, they're not only they come in, but they, like, cause a big mistake, like, they have he's like, I mean, he doesn't need to learn, he's mistake. And another, just, he accepted this opinion that why do I need to be mindful if I'm healthy? Why should I do it?
What do you mean? So you should stay up at night of the theater?
I don't know.
It's a very long cat.
Yes, it's why also I wouldn't mind to fast another day. Like, I'm sure I'm healthy, I can handle this part, but I have headache and I have, okay. Robbie Larikovsky's message was that you should take
part of
the team, yes.
That's true because it says in the I forget where Rashi brings down Chumash somewhere that if there wasn't a Bechor, then the oldest person in the house would die. So it doesn't necessarily have to do with the Din Bechor of literally speaking, the person who has to redeem himself.
Oh.
It has to do with the fact that the person is the oldest person in the house. That's why I think the custom is for any type of Bechor to go to a scene on her face, whether it's a cesarean or not cesarean. In any event, so the idea of Emunah Chachamim, as we say, is according to most Poskim, according to most Rishonim, I should say, is only until times of Chazal, until like the Gemara was sealed, which is about the year 500. Afterwards, there's no requirement, that's what the Rambam says, afterwards there's no requirement specifically to listen. The question is then how the Takonos by Chaim Rabbein of Gershom, right, the institution not to take two wives, how did that come into effect? How is that operative? So the answer is, there's a twofold answer. First of all, it's not halacha. It's not halacha in halacha to marry two wives. If you marry two wives, you'll be put in chayrim. See the difference? Rabbeinu Gershom could come and say, you know what, you have to listen to me and I have made the decree so often to take two wives. He doesn't have the authority to do that. What he can say is, I can't forbid it, but if you do, you're going to be kicked out of the community, you're going to be run out of town, and nobody's going to have anything to do with you for the rest of your life. But that's a good tool to get around that issue of not being able to make the creed. The other answer is that the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom was accepted universally, at least by Ashkenazi Jewish, and therefore it's not really the decree which makes it binding, but rather the acceptance which makes it binding. The fact that they accepted it at the time is a commitment, and that commitment lasts forever. That it's not, therefore, the power of the integration of the decree per se, but rather the commitment which makes that binding upon the Jewish people. Okay? So the two answers. One is that what Chayim is not saying is forbidding, literally, as a Chayim also was accepted by university, and that's why it took effect. Now, there are people who say that Emunas Chachamim means that you have to actually accept what a chacham says in every way, shape, or form, no matter what he's talking about, and you have to assume that everything he says is right, and perhaps even infallible, like the Chassidim say, and that's part and parcel of your emunah. I don't know these people so well, but I can tell you that they're not correct. In other words, at least with that chachamim b'zman hazeh. Chachamim b'zman hagmar, you know, they were chazal. Chachamim b'zman hazeh, there's no specific requirement to accept everything they say. It's just that, you know, we assume that if you are not a particularly great person, and he's a great person, then you're probably wrong, and he's probably right. There's a famous story about Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Moshe Feinstein's son, Rav Reuven Feinstein, was now the Rosh Yeshiva and sat on the Yeshiva. He smoked on Yontif for many years. Yontif, regular Yontif he smoked. So they once brought to his attention that his father, in Igros Moshe, says one is not allowed to smoke on Yontif. Right? Because no longer says Dava Shavu Kol Nefesh, no longer says something which everybody would engage in. So he went to his father, or Reuven went to his father, and Moshe said, how can you let me smoke all these years? Right? You quote his daughter. No. So Moshe said, I don't know, I figured that you went through the sugi yourself, and you came to the conclusion that it's mutter to smoke on Yontif, and you argue with me, and on the basis of your argument with me, that's why you smoked on Yontif. Right? So, you know, it's a fascinating story from several perspectives. Well, one perspective is that the Moshe assumed for his daughter Fudges that his son, Reb Reuven, however old he was at the time, probably his 30s or so, was allowed to argue on him as long as he learned through the sugya, which is true. In theory, if you learn through the sugya well enough, then you should be able to argue on anybody, you know, at least from the Shurim Ma. It's just that, for example, Moshe Feinstein learned through Yeridea over 100 times, and that's just Yeridea. So, if somebody wants to pick a fight with him on an issue of Yeridea, they either have to be very confident or very foolish, because the odds are that he knows better than you. So that would be a Moshe Chachamim in the sense of giving credibility, but in the sense of, you know, like a divine oracle, that whatever Talmud Chacham tells you to do, you should do, that's very difficult to find. That's almost nobody who says that. There's a fellow named Lawrence Kaplan, who's a professor in Montreal, who wrote an article several years ago, a very silly article, about Das Torah. I forget where it was published, more than YU Forum Books. And in it he tried to prove that the reason why Jews are killing the Holocaust is because the rabbis who led them, among other things, the rabbis who led them passed on the basis of Das Torah, meaning on the basis of their intuition or their private reasoning, and they were all wrong in telling all the people to stay in Europe. The problem is that of all the rabbis in Europe, the Catholics only come up with one who told his followers to stay in Europe. It's all be okay.
Somebody said that you should stay in Europe?
Yeah.
I think it's Rabbinic Authority and Personal Autonomy. It's the YU Forum book that's in all the responding, well, not all, but some of the responding essays.
Were there actually people who said you should stay in Europe?
One person. But that was a rabbi.
And he said, you'll be okay? But he said you just should stay in Europe?
Yeah.
So, why he's only one?
What do you mean, why he's only one?
No, but not why. How can you make article someone who said he's a rabbi? He's probably one of the biggest at that point.
He's the only guy, yeah.
So everybody else is insane.
Right.
Maybe they said violence there.
Yeah, but maybe, but he wouldn't know that.
Why was this article based on this Belzerev
and stuff? It's based on this person, the professor's detestation. You know what detestation is? Mm-hmm. His dislike of right-wing rabbis. That's enough of a reason to write an article.
So he used this case as
I mean, there are other instances in Jewish history where people invoke the concept of, you know, that terror would have come in order to justify their positions or to get people to listen to them, but the Holocaust is only one.
There's a very good embarrassing story about it. Maybe I haven't told it once. Can I tell?
Go ahead.
The three Hasidim.
Don't tell it.
Perhaps I told it. Very much advice. Three Hasidim, the man and the speaker was very nice of Rebbe, and was Polish quoted, said that I had a child with business, I didn't know what to do, and I came to my Rebbe, and he said you should buy a stock, and I bought him, and I went to Russia, and I told it was a great deal, I gave a lot of money. And Gary Horses says also, like, my rabbi was sick, and nobody would help. And I went to my rabbi, and he gave a bracha, and she recovered, but she became healthy. So, and the bracha question, very deep story. Don't tell to everyone, because some people don't understand the story. The bracha question says, also had a shiloh business, and I went to rabbi, and he gave me a bracha to buy certain like boots, and I bought it, and I sold it, and got completely bankrupt. What's so great was, because I'm still positive of my rabbi. So I did that they say something like, it goes beyond, it's better for this to stay in Europe. Well, the rabbi could mean like, maybe it really goes back better for him.
I tell you, actually, Lubavitch. Well, it's essentially Lubavitch because Lubavitch believes, actually, no, Lubavitch, not the nun Lubavitch, believes that the who continue to believe the Rebbe's Mashiach say that even though it's counterintuitive, doesn't make sense logically at this point, nevertheless, the certain things which are Mamalami Tam Vadat, things which are above and beyond reason and wisdom. Meaning that you have to have, there's Shemuna is to believe in something, I believe it's the early church father, Tertullian, who said, I believe in it because it is absurd.
I think this story is not about the bias, not the bias. Like people used to go to rabbis for Rukhnistik, for Rukhnistik things. Now it became like more Gashmistik. I go for Broch, not for a greater understanding of Torah, not for greater like growing the Rukhnistik. And now people go for Parnassus, for health. It used to be a byproduct. And now it became like main, like I go to Rebbe not because I want to be close to God, not because I want to have great understanding at all. And now this holy guy, and he wants me to be rich, I'll be rich. He wants me to have like 10 kids, I'm going to have 10 kids. So, but it's not ideal. I see this like by itself. It's not ideal of Munat Hakam. It's not we go to Rebbe, Talmud Chokhmah or something else. It's not, even when Ishmael would say that, Hashem promised us all this, like land, all this we're going to have. We cannot question why Hashem promised us all these nice things. He doesn't say, if you keep my mitzvahs, you're going to be close to me, right? He says, if you keep my mitzvahs, you're going to have food to eat, like clothes to wear, and stuff like that. The idea is that if you do right things, I'm going to give you tools to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But primary, like, I don't know.
But I have to tell you two stories. I agree with you.
Two stories.
Two stories. One of them is not true. One of them is just a joke. The other one is a true story. Yeah, just what reminded me before about the letters. I reminded me of one of the Yavai Hasidic jokes right now. There was two Hasidim arguing which letter is better, favorite, right? But the one Chassid said to the other letter Chassid, no, my letter is very big. So yesterday it was raining, or whatever it was raining, and walking down the street with my letters and an umbrella, so he said, rain on the right, rain on the left, and here it should be clear. And in fact, it was raining on his right side, and on his left side, and he walked down, and he remained completely dry. Rather, right? So the other husband said, you think that's an accomplishment? My rabbi is even greater. My rabbi was walking down the street once on Shabbos, and he saw a $10 bill in the street, and he said, Shabbos on the right, Shabbos on the left, here a weekday, and he picked up the bill and took it home. you brought that to mind on what you said before. Different reasons, I think. But the real point is that I happened once in my life, once to a Makubo. Someone convinced me to go, that there was a fellow named, Rabbi Pinto, who goes around and, place to place. And, somebody said, no, he's real. Well, I thought, lots of fakers, but he's real, so go see him. So I went to see him. So, before you, I headed back to the bracha, to finish my right for him, to finish Yerushalmi,
Right, bro.
To be able to find a good position in teaching Torah. So the first thing he said to me, he says, this is when I was still in Chicago, so he was right. He said, Tarikh la'avor dira. You have to move. So,
You
did
your share over.
What?
No, further.
Okay,
go ahead.
So I just kind of shocked because, he doesn't know, but I have that much belief I don't have. So he said, he thought that he was dealing with somebody who was somewhat, a little snaggy. So he said, well, you don't really have to move. should move, do something new in the house, move a closet in the house from a shelf in the house from one place to another. Your wife wants to redo the kitchen, redo the kitchen, do something differently. So, okay, what are you doing that? So I obviously decided ultimately left Chicago, so he must be right. But in any event, so then I tried to get him on to topics which I wanted to talk about, which is, but he kind of brushed me off. At the end, he told me some cute little voice on the word gracious, which I don't remember, which is, not anything substantial, which I could then say, oh, this is anything to do with Avodah Zarah. It was some cute idea. So, yeah, I actually found
that. Maybe when you finish all your story, you'll understand the story.
So I actually found it to be very, very disconcertingly true what you're saying. In fact, today, even the Mevorkim themselves are geared towards giving brachas, because first he told me about it. Actually, they say, I'll share brachas, this brachas, that. They're geared not towards brachas in Avodas Hashem or hadracha leadership in Avodas Hashem, but rather they're geared towards, people coming in asking for health and wealth and all that kind of stuff. So that's what Baal Chaim is upset about. Well, kind of life, that if you want to come to me, the only thing I do is teach you. I can't tell you where to live, I can't tell you who to marry, I can't tell you how to make a living, I can only teach you. And when I teach you, you yourself can be a rabbi too. Everybody should be a rabbi.
It's a famous quote about Shitaber Findus, he said about the Vayach Rebbe, that all rabbis were looking for fathers, and the Vayach Rebbe, he was looking for leaders. I don't know how much you agree with
that. I don't buy it. I don't think it's true.
Look, it's a sport of, I think, sounds like English Shabbat. I have it. Okay, it's one I can think of.
Yeah, I don't think that's really true. I don't think Baba Shabbat he was looking for leaders in one way, but if anything, Baba Shabbat's followers are much more fanatic about following him than any other Hasidim, right? So there's something, it doesn't really quite hold up what you're saying. But anyway, so I give a little comment, generally speaking, some people in fact take it that far, that it goes to, everything, had the Amunas Chachamim on the level that it must be, some people have, so really after Rabbi Pinto had finished talking to me, I would have gone out, sold my house, and moved to, to Phoenix, whatever. So,
Why
should
you move to Phoenix?
I don't know, it's just there. So I don't think that falls in the category of Munas Chacham. That's what I'm trying to say. I don't think that Munas Chacham is simply a mitzvah of Munas Chacham. I think that it's wise to Munas Chacham. It makes sense to Munas Chacham. But the mitzvah of Munas Chacham specifically, or the issue of Munas Chacham specifically, occurs to pertains to Chazal. Now, it pertains to Chazal also to Munas Chacham. Meaning, just because you never met Rabbi Yochanan, right, you can't come and say, Rabbi Yochanan, I don't believe in you, right, so Rabbi Yochanan is still Rabbi Yochanan, after all these years, right? So therefore, that Munas Chacham extends to Chazal today. Right? You can't go back you shouldn't go back, and try and second guess or undermine or chip away at credibility of Chazal. At the time, Chazal, of course, this was true already then. The famous story in Balabasa, that there was a certain Talmud which Rabbi Yochanan had. Rabbi Yochanan once fashioned a shiur. This might not necessarily be taken literally, but it's supposed to teach a lesson. Rabbi Yochanan was supposed to teach once a shiur. He said that, when the Beit HaMikdash is going to be, when the Gula will come, so the gates of Yerushalayim will be all of precious stone, and they're going to be 40 amos high, 20 amos wide, and all of that is going to be carved into the precious stones, and there's certain the Talmud will make fun of him. They said, come on, now or day and age, we don't find gems larger than size of an egg. We don't have gems that large. But then once he went down to sea, which either means literally went down to sea, or it means that he started meditating in some way, shape, or form, and he saw that the Malachi Asherites were in fact carving gems that size for the gates of Yerushalayim. So he came back to Rabbi Yochanan and said, Rabbi, Yashukayah, you gave a good Joshua. You knew what you were talking about. But the proof is that I saw that that's the case. Rabbi Yochanan got very upset with him. He said, until now you didn't believe it when I said it, so you're malachim shal dibrei chachamim. You're a mocker, a scoffer of the words of the rabbis, so it says that he looked at him and became a heap of bones. Right? So, gradually, Rabbi Yochanan literally killed him, like the Parsha Chat, or just figuratively killed him. But in any event, the idea of Amuris Chachamim made Rabbi Yochanan was true then, it's true now. Because Rabbi Yochanan is on a different astral plane. He has different connections. He has different relationships with Hashem, with other Chachamim than we have, and that continues to be true even after the Gemara is sealed. So the Amuris Chachamim might not apply beyond the sealing of the Gemara, but it certainly applies to the people in the Gemara even in our day and age. Okay? Let's take a look at what the Maharal has to say about this, if I can find it. Yeah, on page Resh Ches Tani. Belief, says, it's almost like you said before, if you said that the relationship precedes the emunah. He's saying the emunah leads to a relationship. If you believe in them, you're going to want to relate to them and, you know, understand what they have to say to a much greater extent. So therefore, the belief will lead you to cling to them, to become connected to them. And therefore, it's proper, since he has Zekos, he believes in them, and therefore he's trying to connect to them, that he should acquire their wisdom. And he himself will then become one of the Chachomim. But if he doesn't believe in the words of the rabbis, so if he can be a Chacham himself, if you don't believe them, where else are you going to get Torah from? Torah is given as a Mitzvah, right? If you don't accept the Mitzvah from the Chachamim, so then where are you left? You're not going to learn Torah for any legitimate reason, I should say. Maybe for some other reason, but the learn Torah legitimate reason implies that you accept Chachamim, and that's why you're trying to learn their what they have to say. V'cheyakach Amru, repaired by Member Likin, so said Chazal in the Sabbath Shabbat, the Dachmir Rabbanan, somebody who has fear of Tamid Chachamim, who has Moyeh Tamid Chacham, he himself will be a Tamid Chacham. So it's an interesting thing. You know, you have to be, in order to become a Tamid Chacham, you have to have Yira, not just from Hashem, but also from Tamid Chacham. And that also goes back to the fact that the Chacham absorbed, he assimilated the Torah of Hashem. Since he assimilated, so now he has a divinity aspect to him, not that he's God, but he has a divine aspect, which is something to which you should give respect, honor, want to cling. If you do give respect and honor and awe and want to cling to it, so then you yourself can become a Talmud Chacham. That's the assumption is, you know, there's so much there in the Chacham which you could tap into if you just put in the right pipe. And the right pipe is the pipe which is the fear, the awe, the desire to connect to a Talmud Chacham, and then stuff starts flowing out to you. That's my round words to Emunah Chachamim. Let's go to the next one. The next one is a very, very depressing one. Kabbalah Yisurim. President, as said here, according to the article, acceptance of suffering. It's a very strange thing. What does it mean, acceptance of suffering? What does that have to do with acquiring Torah? What would you say?
Acceptance of suffering? Because it comes with devoting your life to Torah.
Oh, that's one. That's
one kind of.
Right. That's
the
one.
The yoke, the commandment, the affliction. You know, that kind of thing. Sacrifice, material.
I understand. I didn't know what you were saying. That could be true too. Okay. So what Noach is saying is that.
No, what I'm saying, but what I'm saying could be said.
Oh, could be said. Is that the Kabbalah Yisurim means you accept the yoke that the Torah puts upon you, right? The Torah is a burden, and since the Torah is a burden, you have to accept it, right? So that's something which
necessary.
Necessary in order to progress in acquiring Torah. I was thinking that the one for me that if a person has to learn, if a person acquires Torah, learning Torah has to, you know, live a simple life
to learn Torah.
To learn Torah, then he has to accept that.
Yeah.
Okay. But there's a third level of understanding, which I think is actually the true level of understanding, which is that if a person, the story the Chavos HaOvavos brings down, I think it's called the Chavos HaOvavos, the Ari Kaplan brings it down, one of his books, I think, in their space. He says that once the fellow wanted to complain, and he wanted to become one of the meditators, he wanted to join a society of people who meditate, and are trying to accomplish prophecy. So the master said to him, listen, when somebody insults you, you get angry? He said, yes, of course I get angry. He said, in that case, you can't be one of us. So go do what you need to do, but you can't become one of us. So the English word for that state of mind, I think, is equanimity. In Hebrew, it's hish tab tus. Right. Equanimity means